Today on Doomed, we are just days away from the Iowa caucus, the official beginning of the primary season, the Democratic primary season, and Bernie Sanders is surging. What does that mean? It means that the media and establishment Democrats who didn't take him seriously are rushing to drop that sweet, sweet Oppo research. Today on Doomed, we will be talking about the mass movement to stop Bernie Sanders as we head to Iowa. And joining me to do that, let's pull us both up, on the feed here. La la la. Here we go. I have two screens now, which is new, so I'm getting used to that. Here we go. Joining me for this episode, writer, activist, and contributor for the Nomiki Show, Sam Finkelstein. You probably have seen him on Twitter as @CancelSam. Sam, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Let me put you up a little bit. There we go. You were a little bit low, but you should be good now. Let's get right to it. So, Sam, as I said in the intro, the media, mainstream media, and establishment Democrats have been in, like, hyperdrive, practically, to stop Bernie Sanders, well, at least try to convince people to not vote for Bernie Sanders in the upcoming Iowa caucus on Monday, and in New Hampshire, and in Nevada, and so on and so forth. So, let's start with that. What's your take on this mass, like, just out of the blue? It's like all of a sudden they're taking Bernie Sanders seriously now.
So I think that they're panicking in large part because they have no idea what to do. You know, their strategy for almost the entirety of 2019, I would say, until like the last 2 weeks, was to just pretend that he didn't exist at all. And, you know, to the point where they like omitted him from polls or just like wouldn't include him in media coverage, despite being in second place for essentially the entire time. And that was a terrible idea on their part, because if you look at an election like the UK with Corbyn, they spent years smearing him. And ultimately, they really assassinated his character. And with Bernie, they wasted their whole opportunity to do that has been burnt up. And honestly, I think at this point, it's too late. And they don't know how to wield whatever power they still have culturally or in terms of influencing politics. We saw this a couple days ago when some super PAC associated with, you know, the Democratic establishment spent, I think it was $700,000 buying negative ads in Iowa. Bernie sends out a text message to his supporters saying, this super PAC is buying negative ads in Iowa, and he raises $1.3 million off of the fact. So he raised double what they spent off of the fact that they did that. And then the New York Times, you know, Sidney Ember, his New York Times reporter who, you know, has never given positive coverage to them, writes this article, basically almost read like a warning. Like, you need to rethink the strategy because this was a win for him.
Right. Excuse me. There was actually no show last week, no Doomed episode last week, because I was like brutally sick. I was like more sick than I've been in the past. Like, I hosted the second half of the Majority Report and filled in for Sam Cedar 2 weeks ago, and I've been sick ever since. That day was the first day I was super sick, and so I'm gonna have a cough, but I'm gonna do my best to mute it. But let's get back to the important stuff here. That group you were talking about is the Democratic Majority for Israel. And now listen, if this was an attack ad where they're knocking Bernie's stance on, you know, what he said in terms of that he would think about pulling back military aid for Israel if they didn't come to the table in good faith to work out a peace deal with the Palestinians, that's like, I don't agree with them, but that would is what you think they would attack him for, you know, issues relating to Israel. But it's nothing to do with that, to show you like just what they're going for here. It's not even that, oh, we're gonna say something about and criticize Israel, Bernie's stance on Israel. The attack at, I think it knocks him for his health. I literally think it brings up his heart attack. Like that's what they're going for.
They brought up the heart attack and they, you know, just concern trolled about his ability to beat Trump. It was extremely, extremely low energy. And I was talking to someone and, you know, I think that in the past, hit can't like, you know, smear campaigns, you know, from the Clintons, for example, against Obama, or like there was a lot more passion there. You know, this seems very uninspired. They're not trying. They don't know what angle to take. It's just they're basically saying with dramatic music behind it exactly what MSNBC has been saying to no avail for a year.
Right. Well, the thing is, and that's absolutely right, the thing is they've never come across anything like this before. They're failing at hitting him the way they want to. They're literally like the things that usually work for other candidates – they're finding is not working for Bernie Sanders, and they don't know what to do. They're at a loss.
Well, they still fundamentally don't understand his appeal or why people support him. Like, I would love to hear Chris Matthews explain why, you know, first-generation Mexican immigrants love Bernie Sanders. I would love to hear him explain that because they have no idea. It's completely beyond them. They're so divorced from the reality that ordinary people live, that they just don't get it. So they, you know, in a different world, something like, you know, Bernie's health would be an issue, but people aren't voting for him because he's the healthiest. They're voting for him because they think he's the best opportunity to improve, you know, the material conditions of their lives. And that's not going to change having seen a 30-second attack ad.
Right. Right. They don't get the appeal. That's absolutely correct. And let's actually get to some of these more ridiculous smears, because a lot of this is regurgitation from 2016, which is hilarious to me because their whole talking point is Bernie Sanders has never been vetted. Yet I remember specifically, like I would say 85% of these attacks, I remember them from 2016 because I was tweeting about them in 2016. So that's always hilarious. But there are some new ones. There are some new things they're going after. And let's bring up this one first, because this is just happening today. This is breaking as we're recording this episode. So the Washington Examiner, a right-wing rag, by the way. This is a conservative news outlet that's not, you know, it's a conservative news outlet. There you go. It's like Breitbart. It's like the Daily Caller. It's like the Daily Wire. It's in the same vein as those sites. So this Washington Examiner piece comes out that basically says Bernie Sanders said that George Wallace was sensitive in the 70s. Now let me pull up this piece because it is, you know, I want to read exactly what they put here. So their tweet actually is segregation now, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever in quotes, and they attribute it to George Wallace in his 1963 inaugural address as governor. And then right after that they say Bernie Sanders praised the segregationist, and it links to the article. Bernie Sanders praised segregationist George Wallace as sensitive in 1972. So let me read what they write. This quote they find is from the Brattleboro Reformer in 1972. It's a Vermont paper. Bernie Sanders, 31, said, Wallace advocates some outrageous approaches to our platform. Let me reread this. Wallace advocates some outrageous approaches to our problems, but at least he is sensitive to what people feel they need. First of all, that is inaccurate to their headline, which says Bernie praises George Wallace as sensitive. He's not saying he is sensitive. Like, oh, what a sensitive man. he was saying that he is sensitive to what people feel they need. And then he follows up. There's more to it. Where is what they wrote? They didn't even put it together, which is ridiculous. Oh, they edited it. That's why I can't find it. They edited it to add what we were finding. Oh, this is too funny, man. Did you see this?
I didn't.
So this is happening as we're talking. Oh, there's an editor's note. This story has been updated to include other comments Sanders made about Wallace. So let's get to that. So after Washington Examiner throws up that quote, which anyone reading that who knows anything about politics, what Sanders is saying is that Wallace is outrageous, but he's feeding into what the people say they need so he can push those outrageous things. And then, so this is what Bernie wrote that I pulled up, and even David Weigel from Washington Post and Andrew Krasinski from CNN were posting after this Washington Examiner piece came out.
And about 1,000 other people.
And 1,000 other people, yes. But I'm saying those two because these are mainstream reporters.
Yeah, for sure.
Who rebuked this, rebutted this. So CNN had written a piece actually about Sanders on George Wallace.
That's the problem with this smear campaign, because had they not done that, I know of a certain Politico reporter who is very fond of Elizabeth Warren that would have already been talking about that, how Bernie Sanders praised George Wallace, but they can't. Because in this instance, like, CNN is not going to refute their own reporting. Right. And I can't – Andrew Krasinski, you said his name is, right?
Right.
He wrote, like, a very good piece explaining exactly what Bernie was articulating in this essay. And it's very insightful point.
And I want to stress here that this is before – months – this is from months ago. This isn't, like, him going, oh, let me pull this up to rebut this Washington Examiner piece. This is literally proof, being that it was written months ago, that anyone dealing in good faith would understand what Bernie Sanders was saying about George Wallace.
No, I think that it's really telling that the accounts that are pushing this, by and large, are your typical, like, K-Hive, black-pilled, nihilist lunatics.
Right.
But
right.
These people are ostensibly Democrats.
Right.
And they're being fed total bad faith propaganda by a outlet that otherwise publishes, like, borderline, like, white nationalist level stuff, and they're taking it and they're spreading it. So it's like, who really are their allies here? It's a very, you know, strange bedfellows type of situation.
Listen, this show, you know, this is my show, I could talk about whatever I want on it, but I try to really focus on, because this is what I've basically sort of, it's my beat, is cover the right wing, cover the far right, cover the reactionaries online, cover the white supremacist movements. You know, that's sort of what the initial real focus of the show is, what most of these episodes on this show usually are about. But with the primaries rolling in, I've been doing a lot more episodes on the Democratic primaries. And that's because there is misinformation and disinformation being pushed by the right on these Democratic primaries. Another reason is I feel like the Democratic primaries need to be covered if you're interested in defeating the right, because the way we're going to defeat the right is by following who wins in these Democratic primaries and covering this legitimately so the person who could actually defeat them wins. So that's a great point you made about how these right-wing outlets are basically covering this stuff in bad faith, and people who are ostensibly Democrats are taking the bait, all because they dislike Bernie Sanders.
I don't even know if taking the bait is the best way to put it, because I'm pretty sure that
willingly doing it. You're right.
Either they know it's not true or they don't care whether or not it's true, because it's what they want.
Right.
That's all that matters. It's what they want.
So let me read this before we get too far away from our original discussion of it, from the George Wallace piece. So here is what Bernie Sanders wrote about George Wallace. The same year, as that quote that Washington Examiner pulled up. It's written in an issue of Movement, which was a magazine put out by Liberty Union, which was the third party in Vermont that Bernie Sanders was a part of at that time. And he basically, in 1972, interviewed Wallace supporters. And in this piece, he says that I came away from these Wallace interviews with two basic feelings. First, that democracy in America, in any sense of the word, just might not make it. My mind flashed the scenes of Germany in the late 1920s. Confusion, rebellion, frustration, economic instability, a wounded national pride, ineffectual political leadership, and the desire for a strong man who would do something, who would bring order out of the chaos. Could it happen here? With the inability of the national leadership to solve the real problems facing this country, could the blacks, long hairs, and he puts this in quotations because he's mocking this word, this phrase, welfare chiselers, which is basically was my understanding, it was like a older right-wing phrase for welfare queens,
yeah.
And political dissidents, could they become the Jews and communists of the Nazi experience? Could it happen here? I see no reason why it couldn't. He's calling George Wallace. He's equating George Wallace to the Nazis. He's equating Wallace to Hitler. He does continue to say in later in the next part of the piece that these Wallace supporters he spoke to, he found a certain feeling of admiration and respect for their angle at the political system, but he feared that Wallace's influence was growing and their collective rage posed as an existential threat to civil rights and American pluralism. He's again literally talking about how Hitler fed off the sentiment in Nazi Germany, well, in Germany, so it became Nazi Germany. It was how he rose to power. He's literally saying what he later on, fast forward to 2019, 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020, this is what he said about Trump.
He's outlining in 1972, you know, I really interesting contrast. You'll remember after Trump won, there was a huge market for articles where, you know, coastal elite journalists went on safari into Trump country. And they would talk to all of these Trump supporters as though they were, you know, like these bizarre specimens to understand. And then, you know, this really peaked with like that J.D. Vance Hillbilly Elegy book. But never did they reach the level of insight that Bernie Sanders did in 1972 talking to George Wallace supporters. They still don't understand this. And it is a crucially important point, because if you don't understand what Bernie outlined in 1972 here, you don't know why Donald Trump won. And if you don't know why Donald Trump won, you don't know how to win now.
I mean, it's hard to see that, you know, it's almost willful. Because some of these folks, I'm not talking about the Washington Examiner, the people who are spreading this stuff, some of them know, basically, that this is true about Trump's rise to power. Yet when Bernie says it, they weaponize it against him as if he's supporting it. And nothing is more true, and we can segue, it's a perfect segue, into the Joe Rogan endorsement controversy and drama. Because here's what happened. Joe Rogan's talking to Barry Weiss on an episode of his podcast from, what, like 2-3 weeks ago? And she asks him, Barry Weiss sucks, by the way, and she asks, and she's basically equated Bernie Sanders himself to Nazis, I think, in her smears of him. So she asked Joe Rogan, her good pal Joe Rogan, who he's going to vote for. And he says, probably Bernie Sanders. Now, for her to say that, for him to say that, for Rogan to say that in front of her, first of all, was just so, chef's kiss. I mean,
oh yeah.
It was so pleasing to the ears to hear that. And then, so Joe Rogan practically endorses Bernie. He says he's going to vote for him to his audience of millions of people. And listen, I have long criticized Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan, without a doubt, and there's data that's been put together that shows this. There's been data that looks into YouTube radicalization, and there are tons of lines that can be drawn, data points that point from Joe Rogan's show to far-right YouTube programs. And a lot of that is because Joe Rogan has given a platform to a lot of far-right names, especially after Trump's rise to power. Joe Rogan had some horrific people on his program. Gavin McGinnis, Milo Yiannopoulos.
Of the IDW,
right? All the IDW, all the right, all the intellectual dark web guys.
The whole conduit, you know, short right. of actual overt Nazis, but everybody else, you know, the whole funnel to
did
get.
Did he have Richard Spencer on, or was that just CNN? I can't remember.
Yeah, that's another question.
So there's no doubt Joe Rogan is a problem. But even putting those, even in the criticism of Joe Rogan, no one has ever accused him of being the same as these people. You want to draw the parallels. You want to say he's adjacent. You want to say he props up these people. These are arguments we could have for sure. I've done full episodes of this program criticizing Joe Rogan. Especially the times he has Tim Pool on, because I think Tim Pool is the most bad faith actor out there. I mean, at least the right wingers he's had
like,
on.
He's like Andy No light.
Right.
Andy No with a beanie.
Right. So Joe Rogan, I'm not even a fan, although I do think he's a talented interviewer. And I think there's a lot of talented interviewers on the right who are, hell, on this show, I've probably fewer people have covered specific episodes of Alex Jones and specific issues of Alex Jones like I have. And I always explain how one of the things that Alex Jones has going for him is that he is really good at what he does. He is a plus radio host. He knows how to foment the anger. He has real talent for the drama of it, for playing up his bullshit storylines. Doesn't mean I support them. Doesn't mean I am a fan of his. But if you don't realize that this guy is actually talented at what he does, and that's why the shit he does works on people, then you're doing yourself a disservice in combating it.
Well, I think that people get overly wrapped up in talking about the merits of Joe Rogan himself, because that's totally beside the point. He has an audience of like, what is it, like 14 million people?
Right, maybe. Well, the reason he has that audience is because he's a really talented interviewer.
Exactly.
He does the same thing Howard Stern does, where Howard Stern brings on his interviewers and he just lets them talk.
Yeah, like Hillary.
Right. And you know, it's a talent to have to do that. I feel like, you know, I'm not saying I have that talent. I'm not going to pat myself on the back. But when I debate right-wingers, whether it was on this show, whether it was my time at the Majority Report, whether it was when I went on their shows and debated them, like I did with Paul Elam from A Voice for Men, a major men's rights outlet, one of the things that you got to do is let them talk, because these people will literally hang themselves. That's all you have to do. You have to just get them to talk, because what they are saying is insane. And, you know, Joe Rogan is good at doing that. He should, when they say insane things, he shouldn't go, yeah. And he is also, and this is where I've criticized him too, he's agreed with a lot of stupid things too, because he's not very bright when it comes to politics. But he's good at getting people talking. And so Joe Rogan... And let's push back now to where Joe Rogan's endorsement of Bernie comes into all this. So the fact that he's endorsing Bernie, like you said, to his 14 million people is friggin' huge. You have anything to add to that?
Absolutely. The thing about the Rogan endorsement that I thought was so important was that, you know, you say he doesn't have a very sophisticated politics. It's kind of hard to pin down. And that's also a description of like 100 plus million people in this country. And, you know, while we can simultaneously say he's, you know, both platform people that are bad, and he has stances on things that are not reflective of, you know, the values of even just like the Bernie Sanders campaign. But that said, neither do most people. And, you know, I'm someone who, you know, I've taken many of the sorts of courses in, you know, post high school education where you learn, you know, the sorts of terminology that is expected of people on on Twitter, basically.
Right.
And that's all well and good, but that doesn't describe most people. And if you want to reach these people, because these are primarily people who I don't even know if they vote. I don't think that Rogan's audience is mostly Trump supporters. We have to remember that there are literally 100 million people in this country who didn't vote in 2016. And for all the talk that MSNBC and these establishment Democrat types do about appealing to moderate Republicans and, you know, having bipartisan cross whatever appeal, whenever it comes down to actually doing that, like, what's their plan? This is more meaningful outreach than any other Democrat has done in the entirety of the post-Trump, or, you know, the Trump presidency. There's been no outreach. All it is hand-wringing and basically them trying to do what they did in 2016 and, like, scold people into the Democratic Party. That's never going to work. People will either just not vote or vote for Trump, at least the people who we're talking about.
I'm glad you brought this up, because one of the major themes of this show, when I talk about the white supremacist movement, when I talk about Nazis, when I talk about racists, when I talk about reactionaries, is that, especially when we talk about radicalization, these people, the true believers, I usually call them, the real deal white supremacists, the David Dukes, the Richard Spencers, the Iron Cross people, the Iron March people, the base, these real deal white supremacist organizations, and personalities, who this is what they live for. There's no changing their mind. It is who they is. They are who they are, and they hate minorities, they hate LGBT people, they hate anyone who is not a white male European, they hate Jews, they hate Muslims, they hate anyone who isn't Christian, they hate Catholics. These people are not going to be spoken to. These are the people we're trying to purge from society. But the 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, whatever age they are, the guy logging online who's not like that and then falls into the rabbit hole and becomes like that because they get brainwashed by these people, because they get provided a scapegoat for their own problems. And, you know, a lot of times they're not very sure of themselves. A lot of times these folks aren't very smart, and if they are smart, they're not. They're young, so they're not. Their brains haven't developed quite fully yet in terms of having a true political understanding or belief system. These people get tricked into it, and I'm not saying this to give them a pass. I'm not saying this to say we should coddle them. They should be treated as the adults they are, but we've seen time and time again, there's literally organizations that are out there, legitimate organizations out there, to bring these people out of white supremacy, like you bring people out of a religious cult or something. And we know that there are people who fall into this who could be brought out. And that's the whole point of this. That's the whole point of debunking these people. That's the whole point of fighting back on the true believers. It's because we want to show these folks who are not the true believers that, hey, you're being duped. And, you know, if they can't be brought back, then they do become the true believers, then fuck them. But if they are just being duped and we can show them that, hey, this is not truth, Mexicans and black people and Native Americans and Latinos and Muslims and Middle Eastern people and Asians and whoever you want to, you know, transgender folk, whoever you want to, they blame that you want to wrap up into this, we can say, hey, those aren't the people to blame. This is what's going on. And they go, hey, yeah, you're right. Then what the, why would we not do that? I mean, the point is to create a society that's not like that. And if you're saying that there's 60 million people out there who voted for Trump, who that not even a few of them are able to be brought back into the fold to be shown the error of their ways, then, you know, I don't know what the fuck the point of doing anything is then, really. Because what's the whole point of any of this? You know, it's like, you think there's that many people who, and granted, there are a lot of racists, trust me, a lot more than I'm sure where most people are willing to really come to terms with. But there are a lot of people, and we know because there's a significant amount of people who voted for Obama twice and then voted for Trump because they were duped.
You know, for all of the talk about purity tests, they love to say when we talk about Medicare for All, oh, it's a purity test. You won't compromise. When we talk about these voters who, you know, even just we don't know who these people are. They kind of get caricatured. But just talking about like Rogan's audience, they're like, oh, well, you know, Rogan said things that are transphobic. So like we basically don't want 14 million of his viewers to vote for us because like how is that not a purity test? That's an absurd purity test. And it kind of rests on the assumption that people are totally unchanging. Like if you are a racist right now or if you have transphobic views right now, that's never going to change. And you're just a bad person. And at that point, it's like you're saying, what's the point of doing anything?
Listen, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but and I'm saying they're completely wrong, and that's why the left and progressives fight back this stuff and debunk the sort of misinformation bullshit about there out there. But for one example, there's a large segment of the population, even Democrats. People who vote for Obama and Hillary, who have some pretty fucked up, messed up views of transgender people. Like, this is, like, not something that's some far right, like, there. It's just one of those things that people have not come to terms with. It's the same thing as gays and lesbians just, you know, 10, 20 years ago. You know, transgender folk, their time has not yet come. They are no way, shape, and form treated the same as even, you know, the LGB in LGBT. Like, they are still marginalized in ways that, you know, gays and lesbians and bi people are no longer. And those people still have, you know, face marginalization and discrimination. But which transgender people face, man, it's like we still have a long way to go. And it's with those very people who we have in our, you know, in the big Democratic tent.
Yeah, the tent doesn't seem that big because when we're trying to actually bring people into it, you know, I think that the people who were so mad about the Rogan endorsement, who are also the ones that talk about bringing Republicans into the party and, you know, having bipartisan appeal, when they say bringing Republicans into the party, they're talking about specifically like the ones they see on cable news. And the problem with that, the problem with like the Jennifer Rubens, is there is no constituency of people like that. They're so like insanely overrepresented in media, but in reality, there's they're so far outnumbered by Joe Rogan viewers that it's astronomical. So the idea that we're a big tent party, but we're only going to appeal to like this 5% of the Republican Party, that all of whom live in Washington, D.C. and write op-eds for The Washington Post, it's asinine. It's right. Insane.
Right. You know, Henry Kissinger endorses Hillary and no one's going to bat an eye. You know, no one, you know.
That's just foreign policy.
Right. Right. Madeleine Albright, no one even, that's just how it is, you know? But let me be clear, because I want to make sure it's completely clear. A lot of the people who had a problem with the Joe Rogan endorsement, their rebuttal is, I don't have a problem with the endorsement itself. It's Bernie's campaign touting it. He should absolutely tout that endorsement so everyone knows about that endorsement. He's not giving Joe Rogan with his 14 million listeners a platform. Are you kidding me?
Joe Rogan is giving him a platform.
Absolutely. 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 Joe Rogan gained nothing from Bernie Sanders touting that endorsement. Bernie gained everything. And it's also important to show people that, hey, and I'm also very happy the campaign said before, you know, it said after. You know, they said, you know, we don't agree with everything he says, obviously, but this is, you know, part of having a big tent means accepting people who are open to change. You definitely tout that endorsement, so Rogan's listeners know that you accept the endorsement. You don't just leave that hanging. Are you kidding me?
Well, I think a lot of that specific criticism came from a place of, these are people who don't want Bernie Sanders to win, and they recognize that this is good for him. So they're just offering bad faith suggestions like, oh, you know, this massive endorsement that, for the record, Joe Biden, Pete Buttigieg, and Elizabeth Warren all tried to get. They went and asked Rogan to appear on the show, and he said no.
Right.
Wasn't interested.
Right. And, you know, I was thinking about when this was all happening, I was thinking about how when Pete Buttigieg was going to go on Dave Rubin's show, and he was sort of shamed online to canceling it and not going on the show, and Dave Rubin had a fit about it. And there's a huge difference between Dave Rubin and Joe Rogan.
Yes.
Joe Rogan is just an apolitical dunce in terms of politics. He has dumb political views. He has correct political views. He's like the average American, to be quite frank.
I see him as like a cipher of just the ordinary, you know, average
bro, right?
Pluck an American out of a crowd.
Let me make that clear. There's a lot of different average Americans. So he's like the average bro type American. The average guy who watches UFC, the average guy who goes to the gym. And this ranges, really. There are a lot of UFC fans who are white. There are a lot of UFC fans who are Latino. There are a lot of UFC fans who are black. Joe Rogan probably has a fairly diverse audience. It wouldn't surprise me if he was majority white, because he's, you know, a white bro. But if his audience is anything like the MMA audience, it's probably fairly diverse when it comes to race.
Sure. It's more so the politics and the lack of a coherent set of beliefs that, you know, underpin his political
right
thoughts. That's what I think is really representative of America.
The point of his show, though, the point of his show isn't that it's there to push a specific political point of view. That's why when it does push the far right, it's a big deal and people complain and criticize him and say, what the fuck? And the thing was never, hey, we need to friggin' shut Joe Rogan's show down. It's, why the hell doesn't this guy have more left-wing people on for his large, gigantic audience to listen to? That's always been the rebuttal to Joe Rogan's bullshit. On the other hand, Dave Rubin is literally a right-wing hack who's funded by wealthy far-right institutions to create this show to literally push a far-right agenda. He's had white supremacists on his show. He said, people, you know, what's her face? Oh my God, I've covered her so much on this show, but she disappeared from the face of the planet, so I'm having a mental block right now. She's the one who went to Europe, got on a boat, and tried to stop refugees from entering Europe. What's her name? She literally left the movement because she couldn't handle it anymore because she was getting criticized too much. I've covered her so much on this show, but he's literally given her a platform. And, you know, literally not just, hey, let's talk and, you know, that might be a good idea. Literally, no, like full-blown pushing her agenda. He only has far-right commentators on his show. That's the difference. There's a huge difference between Rubin and Rogan.
This whole thing reminded me a lot of when Bernie Sanders did that Fox News town hall. That was like a huge success.
Lauren Southern. Sorry. Just remember her name. Lauren Southern.
Yes. But, you know, I'm sure that you remember the clips from that where, you know, he's doing call and response with the crowd and they were totally in tune. You know, the Fox commentators that were on there had no idea what to do about it because he was just killing it. And then they asked Elizabeth Warren, like, are you going to do a Fox town hall? Because it was kind of like, you know, expected. And she's like, well, I don't want to, you know, give they're spreading hate and I don't want to participate in that. But it's like, this is the largest, by far, news network in the country. We have to reach these people. And it's not about the host, you know, in terms of Joe Rogan or Tucker Carlson or whatever. Like, we can't pretend that these things don't exist, because they do. And if you're saying that, you know, they're harmful, they're spreading dangerous ideas, which they are, what is the downside of going on there and, like, offering the viewers an alternative? And it's not like Bernie Sanders had to compromise his platform in order to win Joe Rogan's endorsement. Like, Joe Rogan, for all of his, we'll say, racist things that he said or transphobic things that he said, just endorsed the most anti-racist, anti-transphobic candidate ever. And Bernie didn't have to do anything in order to win that endorsement. Whereas, you know, people like Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, they make, or Barack Obama for 8 years, they make overtures to Republicans, make all these concessions, offer to cut Social Security, and at the end of the day, they get nothing in return. I mean, I remember Barack Obama at the height of one of the sequester situations, like, offered all of these concessions in exchange for Mitch McConnell coming to watch a screening of Lincoln at the White House with Obama, and Mitch McConnell stood him up. It's like they make all of these actual concessions and get nothing for it, whereas Bernie didn't have to compromise his platform a bit, and they're mad. And I think that that's part of it, because it kind of gets to the core of their grift, which is to say, oh, we care about unions, we care about Social Security, we care about Medicare, but we have to work with, you know, the other side, and we have to offer up, you know, we have to compromise and blah, blah, blah. And Bernie just blew that out of the water.
Right.
And showed that there's actually a massive consensus on a lot of these things, and you don't have to make these compromises.
That's a really great point. And you know, I brought up the two main ones I wanted to bring up in terms of the media and the establishment and just the anti-Bernie brigade online going after him. But you sent me a few ones specifically you wanted to talk about, so I want to really give you some time here to address some of these clips and pieces you sent me. So, Steve Rattner, tell us a little bit about what he did and who he is, first of all.
Steve Rattner, you know, he's a Wall Street guy. He is just your typical, like,
Isn't he a Bloomberg backer too?
He is a Bloomberg guy.
Just wanted to make sure we got that out there. Go ahead, continue.
He's a Bloomberg guy. And, you know, he goes on Morning Joe to basically, like, sound the alarm about how Bernie Sanders, if he wins Iowa and New Hampshire, they need to have – he's basically making the case for Bloomberg without saying it explicitly. He's saying that there needs to be a centrist alternative, because otherwise, you know, Bernie could catch steam. Like, now, for all the talk that they've – and they're still doing it, saying, like, oh, Bernie can't beat Trump. Their real concern, and it's becoming increasingly obvious, is that Bernie will beat Trump. And that's what they don't want. So it's increasingly obvious, and this Steve Rattner clip makes it very clear, that they're willing to dump a ton of money into a Stop Sanders movement, because their main goal, you know, the Democratic establishment's main goal, the people who represent all of these corporate interests and all of these billionaires, their main goal is not defeating Donald Trump. It's defeating Bernie Sanders.
Right. Yeah. Would it not surprise me if some of these folks end up voting for, if it comes down to Trump and Sanders, if they voted for Trump?
Oh, absolutely. And what's so ironic about all of these never Trump pundits who, you know, I'm talking about your David Frums and your Max Boots, all of these Republicans who've done, you know, half-hearted mea culpas and are now, you know, regulars on the quote unquote liberal networks and liberal newspapers, they're going to vote for Trump if it were Bernie and Trump. There's not a doubt in my mind. And I think one of the lasting consequences of the never Trump movement and how readily the Democratic establishment has welcomed all of these just absolute grotesque warmongering worms into their orbit is that now, you know, I saw the other day, they're like celebrating John Bolton as some kind of hero. And it's like, no, these people are like blood soaked maniacs. And it's really telling to see the establishment rally around them against the left. You know, it's like the saying goes that liberals hate socialists more than fascists.
Right.
And we're really seeing that dynamic play out. Watch MSNBC, you'll see it. And that Rattner clip really just underscored that they're almost just saying it clearly. You know, we're going to spend a ton of money to do anything we can to prevent Bernie Sanders from winning the election. And, you know, I think that Bloomberg is such a good foil for Bernie in the sense that, you know, the guy's worth $50 billion. And that enables him. I saw a poll today where he's ahead of Elizabeth Warren.
He is now in some polls, yes.
It's insane.
All based on.
And he's not, all he's done is buy hundreds of millions of dollars worth of commercials. But he can do that, and it's not even a drop in the bucket for him. So, you know, oh, we're talking about Bernie Sanders raised $1.3 million, and that's huge considering it's coming from, like, my parents donating $270 at a time. But Bloomberg has $50 billion. Like, it's impossible to even conceptualize how much money that is. So if money can change the outcome of the election, he's got enough to do it. And that's really the problem with having people with that much money in a democratic society.
Right. Right. And I would play the clip, but I've had a recent issue with YouTube copyright strikes on my live stream, so I'm going to play it safe.
You'll just have to take my word for it.
Right. Let's bring up this one. Now, this was, I guess, sort of disappointing because I don't want to bring up this all over again. I talked about this on an episode. It is what it is at this point. Don't want to waste, you know, we're having a really good conversation here on the attacks on him. So I don't really want to focus on Warren. But, you know, there was this clip you sent me. Let's talk about the Hillary thing first, because this sets up that clip. Hillary Clinton came out and said how, you know, no one in the Senate likes Bernie and no one wants to work with him. Basically, no one likes Bernie Sanders. I mean, you know, why? Why do that? Why do that at this point? I mean, I'll tell you what, I'm happy she did it because this is another case of them not getting it, because I feel like every time Hillary comes out and says something negative about Bernie,
another 3 points in the polls.
Yeah, he gets another 3 points in the polls, which is always hilarious to me. But I mean, just what is the point that, like, at this, do they really think that's going to affect them? I mean, I assume yes, being that she does it and the other people do it. I mean, what's your take on it?
I think that the idea that Hillary's anti-endorsement would be bad for Bernie is ludicrous. And it's really, to me, no different than this when they throw around news, when Joanne Reed starts, like, smearing him. Like, they're doing is preaching to the choir. And the real danger that the Bernie Sanders campaign poses to the MSNBC crowd is he's preaching in theory, and we will find out in Iowa how well this theory translates to reality. But in theory, he's preaching to a much, much bigger choir than they are. So, you know, they're talking to a bunch of people who are not going to vote for Bernie Sanders no matter what. I don't think that anyone who is swayable is going to be swayed by Hillary Clinton. You know, she's a historically unpopular figure. And it's just very funny that they feel, and it's also, this is a kind of a different topic, but it's also shows how little they've reflected on what happened in 2016. Like, she really just wants to say Russia, Bernie Sanders, Jim Comey, otherwise I ran a perfect election. I ran a perfect campaign, and it was just unjustly taken from me. And if that's their thinking, then left to their own devices, they will lose this election badly.
Yeah, luckily I don't think that's going to be the Sanders strategy when he right. But yes, there is a real excuse me. Concern there that they're going to run with that when it comes down to it. If Sanders isn't the nominee, I want to bring up. Oh yeah, so the reason I brought that up first was because you sent me a clip that you wanted to discuss, where Warren is asked about, is Hillary right to say that? And she basically just says, I'm not going there. I mean, listen, it's good to not want to talk about this stuff. I get it. But also, it seems pretty easy to go, I'm not going there, but I don't want to go there, but I disagree. Or that's, I like Bernie, she could have said. Let's leave it at that. You know what I mean?
She's who Hillary was talking about. Right. You know, like, I don't think this is relevant in the context of the whole Bernie Warren thing, because I'm burned out on that. But it's relevant in the context of Warren not wanting to ruffle any feathers and not wanting, and, you know, just wanting to please everyone. And who did this please? Who was happy about this?
Right.
You know, nobody, of course not. So I think that it really, it's kind of emblematic of a larger problem with her campaign and why, you know, ever since she tried to please everybody on Medicare for All, she's been just steadily moving down in the polls. So there's something to be said about being uncompromising and standing for what you believe. And I think that even, you know, people see that as a form of integrity when it comes to Bernie, even if they don't agree with his actual politics. They think that he had, you know, he believes in what he's saying. And if you can't even say like, oh no, well, I don't want to get into it, but Bernie is my friend, you know, he's a colleague, we work together and we get along well. Like you can't even say that. Come on.
Right. You know, we could bring up so many more. I mean, I can't even remember if I talked about the on a previous episode, if I talked about MSNBC's body language expert who came on to discuss. But I don't, that's not even worth it at this point. Yeah, that's right. Just so people don't know, they had a body language expert come on to try to break down the Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders.
Right. We should be clear about that. That's not a thing.
It's ridiculous.
And I have to give this woman credit. She worked in like the intelligence community prior to this, but I have to give her credit for just fabricating a profession and making a whole thing out of it. Like corporations bring her in as like a consultant to give lectures, and she's on Joanne Reed being anti-Semitic about Bernie Sanders. Like she's made, you know, a name for herself, and props. I respect the hospital.
Let me clarify. It is a thing, body language experts. Now,
the way that you,
I don't really subscribe too much to it, but I also do think that when people, you know, people do, there is a feeling or a point to when people are moving their body. You know, when I move my hands, I'm saying something. When I, you know, roll my eyes, I'm saying something. There's definitely language being spoken with your body. However, to try to pull sort of meaning from it broadly over people is ridiculous, especially from a camera. I could see, you know, if you're in a room with someone, and like, you know, she worked for the intelligence community. I could see being in a room with someone trying to extract information out of them. Let's not even go to all the issues with this. I'm just using a hypothetical and, you know, getting a read off of what their body language is. But A, this would be something that's different for each individual, which clearly, if you watch if you watch what she did on MSNBC, it's literally impossible for her to do that. And then B, you can't do it through a camera. You can't, because the different angles make things look different. Like, you can't do that. Like, there's a difference between sitting in, like, an interrogation room with someone and going, like, you know, I'm not so sure this guy's telling the truth because of what he's doing when he's telling you something. You know, he's not looking you straight in the eye or whatever. There's a difference between that and then saying, like, oh, look how he's shrugging his shoulders as I look at this overhead camera angle from who knows how far back in the room. You know, you just can't do that. He could have not, it possibly wasn't even shrugging his shoulders. I'm already talking too much about this, but you see what I'm saying?
I think that the important takeaway from that whole, you know, thing that we shouldn't get into because it's so
over-discussed
and stupid. But the important takeaway from that is that Bernie has been like pulling away in the polls ever since this happened. Like, I don't think that Elizabeth Warren could have done, short of dropping out of the race entirely, I don't think she could have done anything better for him, because as much as they can bring body language experts on to say that, because the whole point of bringing that woman on was to say Bernie's lying, obviously, and I've been watching his poll numbers specifically with women, he's been going up almost like the exact proportion that Elizabeth Warren has been going down. She's just like hemorrhaging support to him.
Yeah. There's going to be a point where she's going to need to drop out. If she doesn't listen, I don't think she should drop out yet, like people are saying. Obviously, you want to take it all the way to, you want to take it to Iowa at least, so you could actually prove, because, you know, you can't, who knows, you know? She can't drop it now because you never know. The polls could have been wrong. She could, she may win Iowa. I don't think she will, but it is in the realm of possibility. But after, if she loses Iowa, if she loses New Hampshire, I think really New Hampshire, if she loses that and Iowa, if she doesn't call it quits, then she's really, really doing a disservice to the progressive cause. And if she does that, I mean, I think it's going to reflect poorly on her for a very long time. Because it's clear as day that if she dropped out and endorsed Bernie, I mean, obviously all of her followers wouldn't do that, but enough would certainly do it where he would clearly run away with it and he would beat Biden in not every state, but most of them.
Yeah. I don't expect her to drop out, but part of what's so, you know, nerve-wracking about this election is at the end of it, like, I see it as, you know, the DNC is really going to be like confronting the fundamental contradiction that is the Democratic Party, which is that it's a party that is supposed to represent workers and their bosses and like balance those interests out. And Bernie is here saying like, no, this has to be a party for ordinary people. And we can't be compromising on that. You know, the Republicans can be the billionaire party, but that can't be us. We can't be both. You can't represent a billionaire and, you know, someone who works in an Amazon warehouse because their interests are very different. Right. And, you know, the DNC and this might be worth talking about for a minute. The DNC has absolutely like put barricades of all of the most anti-Bernie people up in all of the leadership positions, all of the committees that make decisions. So they're locked and loaded, ready to have this confrontation. And just in terms of Elizabeth Warren, like it's not clear to me which side of that she would ultimately fall on.
Yeah. It's disappointing because I like Elizabeth. I still like Elizabeth Warren. I actually don't like when people online call her, you know, Hillary 2.0 or how she's a centrist or she's a progressive. She's not as progressive as Bernie Sanders, but she is legitimately a progressive, but at least when it comes to policy. Now, whether she, you know, gets how to build a movement, I mean, that remains to be seen, and I think she does not. But again, you know, I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt there. I don't know if she would be strategic when it comes to, you know, outside of policy. And I mean, to me, it looks like she's not very good at the electoral side of this, especially.
In her heart, she's a wonk. Yes. And she does best in that
setting. Yes.
That setting where, you know, she's like grilling some like finance scumbag. And, you know, she shines in that, but you don't want a president who's an expert on one thing.
Right.
It's also the people to be experts on specific things.
Absolutely. It's also why she's fallen into a lot of traps in terms of, you know, the Medicare for All plan she rolled out, the DNA test to prove to Trump that she's actually who she says she is. You know, it's been like gaffe after gaffe like that. And it's constantly because she feels like she needs to have the wonk in her, explain things away. And you just can't do that all the time, especially when it comes to people who are acting in bad faith.
Yeah, exactly. It underscores a kind of like naivete where you think that if you offer, you know, you think that you're dealing with these people on the level of like what's true and what's not. And you're not. You know, when it comes to power and you trying to win power, you're not going to, you know, fact check your way into the White House. It's just never going to happen because ultimately people don't care. Like the media doesn't care. Donald Trump doesn't care. Like they're there to represent a set of interests. And if you don't understand that, if you think that like people are actually operating on the level of, you know, oh, well, you're making a more compelling argument, so I'm going to agree with you, then you're not going to be able to accomplish anything.
Right.
Because that's just, you know, that's West Wing politics.
Right. Now there's two more things I want to talk about. Do you have time?
Yeah.
Cool. So I'm trying to figure out which one to go with first. Let's leave the Bernie Bros for last because that's, you know, that'll be fun. But this one's actually a lot of fun too. There's been a lot of hit pieces. You know, Jennifer Rubin of the Washington Post has basically dedicated every other opinion piece she has to try to take down Bernie Sanders. Of course, she's a conservative. And she's trying to act as a never-Trumper who cares about the Democratic Party and just wants them to pick a moderate that they can all vote for. But, you know, I'm not even going to – she's not even worth my breath right now. If we had time, if we had hours, of course we'd talk about her. But the one I want to talk about
– on MSNBC before they bring a Bernie person on MSNBC.
What was that?
they'll bring her on MSNBC before they bring a Bernie person on MSNBC. So, and that's just so bizarre because, you know, given that he's polling in second place or in first place, there's a massive group of people who he represents, right?
Right.
Jennifer Rubin left the Republican Party because she's not represented in there. You know, she's not a Trump person, and Trump has a 90% approval rating with Republicans. So she comes into the Democratic Party. She doesn't represent anyone, but they will have people like, you know, neocons like that on who have no constituency at all before they have someone like Matt Binder on.
Right.
Like,
well, they should have Matt Binder on. Someone tell them to, there should be a mass email campaign to get them to book me. I think I'm going to try to get that going. People, if you're listening, there's got to be a MSNBC email to send mass emails to get me on.
Contact Joy Ann Reed.
Funny thing was, I was on MSNBC years ago for a hit on Gamergate. And that was my one time on MSNBC. But also we could talk about Kurt Bardella, the former Breitbart guy, who now is telling the left, the Democrats, who they should vote for, and they should be weary of Bernie Sanders. Yeah, Breitbart guy is going to tell us that. But he has a contributor role on Morning Joe on MSNBC. How nice.
The article that he published about the Bernie bros and how viciously he's been attacked. And I mean, it's so obvious how cynical this guy is. He doesn't mean everything he says is just dripping with nihilism and, you know, just total abandon. He called Bernie bros like a digital lynch mob. And it's like to say that about the candidate whose base is the most diverse of anyone in the race is like so astoundingly offensive and disgusting. And MSNBC published it. You know, it's outrageous.
All right, let's talk about the Bernie bro thing now, because you made the connection. Yeah, so like, along with that piece, Washington Post, USA Today, New York Times, like you were just saying, who else NBC did with their opinion piece from Kurt Bardella. In like a week span, there was like seven different pieces about the Bernie bros. Now, you know, and for people who aren't familiar, I think most of my audience knows, but Bernie bros are Bernie Sanders' toxic online fan base who attacks people online. But really what it is someone with some sort of platform says something that's outrageous or straight up lie about Bernie Sanders. His fans jump into their mentions on Twitter.
You're full of shit.
And say you're full of shit.
You're lying.
And for all those people who say, like, you know, either there's three types, I think. If there's probably more, but there's three main types. One, the person who actually engages in trying to bring the debunk the lie or the false information from the Bernie hater is tweeting. There's the second type is the person who just jumps in to say, like, hey, you're stupid. Hey, you're a dick. Hey, dumbass. Which, that's just like basic internet banter. You can say it's mean, but there's nothing problematic about that in terms of like someone saying something racist or something. And then three, you'll get the trolls, the anonymous trolls, who are usually in the minority. Usually there's like, you know, less than 1% of the people who are replying to you who say something actually sexist, misogynist, racist, whatever. Are there Bernie supporters who probably say that? Of course. Every politician has racist, sexist, misogynistic, homophobic supporters because literally that's America. You're going to have that in wherever, whether you're Hillary Clinton, whether you're Joe Biden, whether you're Barack Obama, whether you're Mitt Romney, whether you're John McCain, whether you're Donald Trump. So those are the three main types. To me, you'll probably get further down and break them up even more. But so they say something outrageous. Those types go in there. And then the person with the platform jumps out and goes, I'm being harassed. I'm being attacked.
I've been murdered.
I've seen that. Yes. Listen, if you're being harassed, absolutely disgusting. I deplore it. No one should harass anyone, period. But a lot of times it's not harassment. It's people on a public platform. Like the whole point of Twitter is that there's people go back. That's why they have replies. It's built into the platform. If you want a platform where you just say things and no one says anything back to you, there are platforms for that. Go there. You're not using Twitter correctly. You make your Twitter page private. They give you an option to do that. Like, you're complaining about how the platform works.
The thing that I thought was so great about the, you know, slew of Bernie bro articles, and really this, I wouldn't say it was triggered by Hillary Clinton bringing up the Bernie bros, but that was the sequence of events. Like, she specifically brought up the Bernie bros, and I guess they took it as like a cue, like, oh, now, you know, we're going to launch the deadly Bernie bro attack. They've spent how many years now saying, like, oh, you know, he hasn't been vetted yet. You just wait until you see what comes out, blah, blah, blah. I'll tell you a secret. Like, if there was anything that was going to come out, it would have happened in the last, like, week, right? But instead, their closing argument, you know, these elite, like, media figures and people who have absolutely no connection to regular people, their closing argument is, his online supporters are mean to me personally.
Right.
As if anyone gives a shit. Right. No one cares. It's incredible. Like, that's the best you've got. Like, you know, right now they're unloading their clips and this is it.
One of the pieces, I think it was the New York Times one, actually interviewed people who were harassed by the Bernie bros. And some of those people are people who are trolls themselves, who engaged and said all sorts of horrific things about Bernie supporters. And then what was basically happening is Bernie supporters were jumping in saying, hey, that's incredibly, like, racist or sexist of you to say about me. And then they go, oh, I'm being harassed by all these people who are saying that about me. And that's who they interviewed. Listen, I want to really, really, really stress here that there is harassment online. Obviously, we've covered it on this show. Hell, when I was covering Gamergate, it was a major topic I talked about. Oh, and nothing bothers me more than the people who try to say there's any sort of parallel between this stuff during the primary and Gamergate. It shows to me you have no idea what Gamergate was about and the intense, legit, like, life-threatening harassment that the women who were attacked for Gamergate were experiencing. It's nothing even close to someone jumping in your mentions and calling you a shithead. It's not even close to 20 people.
Oh my god, they called me a corn cob.
Yeah, it's not even close to someone. It's not even close to 100 people replying in your tweets with a snake emoji. It's not even close to what those women experienced during that. So please, if you're being harassed, absolutely, let's stop that shit. But if you're talking about dumb internet troll banter, people calling you ridiculous yet not racist, sexist, or homophobic names like Poopy Head or showing you the pig poop balls image, that is not anywhere close to what you're saying it is when it comes to harassment. Please.
Yeah. I think, you know, and this really reminds me of during the Republican primary, before Trump had clinched the nomination, the National Review, which, for people who don't know, is the standard bearer publication for the conservative movement. You know, it's been around for decades, and it's, you know, where the intellectual conservatives can be found. They published this, you know, this bombshell edition that was like the against Trump edition. This is like, this is not who the Republican Party is. And it had all of the conservative heavyweights, and they all put all of their, you know, strength to prop up the Bush dynasty one more time and get rid of this boorish Trump figure. And nobody cared at all. Like, it was astounding how little of an image, it made no difference in anything. And I think, you know, we didn't really touch on the Jonathan Chait, David Frum side of this.
Oh.
But all of them together, they're like this liberal intelligentsia who are so up their own asses that they don't know that no one cares what they have to say. Like, they're just talking to each other, and they're coming out with their, what, you know, I mean, oh my God, David Frum.
So glad you're bringing up David Frum, because this is actually, out of all those people, you know, you brought up a lot of names.
The most egregious.
The David Frum one, and there's a specific, this is the last thing we'll talk, I wanted to definitely cover. And there's a specific paragraph I want to talk about, but please, I want to let you finish first. But let's completely focus on David Frum now. I'm so glad you went there, because that's what I want to talk about.
The idea that David Frum, you know, former George W. Bush speechwriter, cheerleader for every horrific imperial war that the United States has engaged in either of our lifetimes and probably before that. The idea that he would take to the pages of The Atlantic to say that Bernie Sanders isn't woke enough I felt like my brain was just leaking out of my ears reading that. It was so egregious and so incredible that he would think that he has any pull with the left at all. But the idea that David Frum has the credibility to say Bernie's not woke enough. And I mean, his piece itself, and we can get into that, was just this rambling, totally self-contradictory garbage. But specifically the idea that this like blood-soaked neocon is going to say Bernie Sanders, lifelong anti-racist who, you know, established a mecca for transgender people in Burlington, Vermont in the 1980s during like the AIDS crisis. You're going to say that Bernie Sanders, while David Frum was probably like cheering on the Contras, you're going to say Bernie's not woke enough. It's just, you know, it's so astounding that it's just breathtaking. I don't know what else to say.
Let me read my favorite paragraph here from the David Frum piece. So this is David Frum in The Atlantic. The piece is titled Bernie Can't Win. Ooh. The Trump campaign will not steer clear. It will hit Bernie with everything it's got. It will depict him as a communist in the grip of twisted sexual fantasies, a useless career politician who oversaw a culture of sexual harassment in his 2016 campaign. Yeah, the Trump campaign's going to hit Bernie for sexual harassment. I'm sure they're going to go there. But here we go. Through 2019, Donald Trump and his proxies hailed Sanders as a true voice of the people, thwarted by the evil nominations of the Hillary Clinton machine. They will not pause for a minute before pivoting in 2020 to attack him as a seething stew of toxic masculinity whose vicious online followers martyred the Democratic Party's first female presidential nominee. Can you for a second even imagine them doing that? Trump's going to come out and go like, that Bernie Sanders, everybody. That Bernie Sanders, we all know he's so masculine. He's so toxic. It's too much, folks. It's too much.
The way he treated Hillary, it was very nasty. Very problematic.
He was so mean to Hillary. And we all love Hillary, don't we, folks? We love Hillary, don't we? We love her. Can you imagine that? That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. Bernie Sanders is going to be attacked by Trump for being too mean to Hillary. Oh, my God. If Trump did that, some of his voters might actually switch and, I mean, a lot, maybe like 50% of his voters would actually switch and go, hey, Bernie did all that to Hillary? I'm voting for that guy.
I mean, as recently as a few months ago, I saw video from a Trump rally where they're still chanting, lock her up,
right?
They're like, I don't understand how David Frum, I mean, I just, it's so beyond the pale. If you had told me about this and I didn't see it for myself, I would think that you were lying, because it's just one of the most absurd things I've ever seen.
He was so mean to Hillary, folks. That Bernie said he was so mean to her. We love her, don't we? We love her.
Masculinity. It's very bad. It's very bad.
Listen, we love the feminine side of ourselves, don't we, folks? Don't we just love it? Hillary. Hillary, I can just picture him now doing that. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. What an idiot David Frum is. What an idiot. I mean,
and
for many reasons. But
is that like, I mean, I don't know what he gets paid from The Atlantic, but I'm sure that it's so absurd relative to the value add of him just saying things like, you know, Trump is going to attack Bernie for being a misogynist. He's made a career out of it, you know. I mean, good for him, but that's incredible.
Well, Sam, It's been a pleasure. Do you want to stick around for a minute and stay for another like 10 minutes in the patron only half of the show and break down your Buttigieg piece that you had published?
That would be great.
Cool, because we've run out of time here on the first half of the show. I don't want to give the freebie listeners too much value. If they want to hear more of writer, activist, and contributor for the did you already contribute to the Namiki show? Because I know it's a new show.
Yeah. I was on the first episode. That's up. It's great. Everyone should watch
it. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, so I now have something to watch tonight after this show.
It's good.
So just stick around for a minute. Let me just plug some stuff, and then we'll jump into the second half of the show.
Great.
I'll just put you on. I'm just going to bring your volume down so you don't have to worry about being quiet.
Okay.
All right, folks. Excuse me. Patreon.com/Matt Binder. Support this show by subscribing there. I only ask for five measly dollars a month. And you know, patreon.com/Matt Binder, it helps keep this show going. This past month, actually, we lost a lot of patrons, more than usual, due to financial difficulty, and I totally get it. If you can't subscribe to the show because of financial reasons, the best thing you could do is just spread the word, tell people about the show. Don't worry about it if you can't financially contribute, but if you can, could really use your support now more than ever. Patreon.com/Matt Binder. And by doing so, you would join these fine folks: Abigail T, Adam Q, Alan B, Andrew C, Andrew H, Angela, Ari R, Ben, Benji, Bobby M, Brosnan, Champagne Kami, Christine H, Colin R, Connor R, Cracker Barrel, Cyber Snowstorm, Dan K, Dan M, Dank Uger, Dave K, David Z, Dragon Slayer, Eugene B, Froz K, FTW All Day, George A, Greg D, Grim L, Ian Curtis J, Jack D, Jameson Test, Janelle A, Jasmine H, Jeremy M, John B, John S, Jonathan B, Jonathan L, Joseph R, Joyce M, Justin S, Katie S, Kaushal, La Putin Machine, Lisa D, Lisa H, Mark S, Matt Z, Max W, User Me, Melissa M, Mitch V, Michael B, Michael J, Michael M, Mr. Danks, Nicole A, Namde Net, Null Style, Odeath, Penelope D, Kuster, Ryan, Scott R, Sean H, Stephen R, Stephen S, Struggle Session, TM, Tamney G, Terrence R, Thaddeus A, This Is Not Pizza, Tina M, Todd K, Tom G, Tom M, Why That Thai Guy, Wootopia, and last but certainly not least, Zoe G. Again, lost a lot of patrons this month because of financial issues. It was the beginning of the year, so I totally get why that'd be an issue. And I'm assuming that me being sick for a week and not being able to do the show certainly didn't help contribute. But I'll totally be making up that show. Next week, I'm probably going to do two shows, a regular show on Wednesday or Thursday. But I'm also probably going to do a post-Iowa caucus show once the results start rolling in and we know who won. I'll keep you updated on that. If you are watching the show right now, and you want to give a one-off donation, you could drop a YouTube super chat. You give whatever you'd like. I'll read your comment right away in the patron-only half, which we will go into shortly. Subscribe on YouTube. Follow me on Twitter at Matt Binder. Follow me on Instagram at Matt Binder. Follow me everywhere at Matt Binder, except for TikTok, where I'm at Matthew Binder, because I don't know why there is not a Matt Binder on there, but it says it's taken for some reason. So that's where you could find me. What else? Find my guest from this show, Sam Finkelstein, on Twitter at Cancel Sam. Wanted to get that in because I forgot to say it when I was plugging him at the end of the interview. I'm probably going to start doing, finally, those standalone YouTube clips, like short 2-3-4 minute breakdowns of stuff as the primaries start rolling out. Now as we get into the thick of primary season, I should say. I'll let you guys know what the scheduling of that's going to be, if I actually get a scheduling going or if it's not just random. I'll figure it all out. Don't worry. A lot of things in the works. I don't know if you noticed, I'm looking over here to my, if you're on the YouTube live stream, I'm looking over here to my left, your right. I got a second screen here so I can see things more clearly, bigger, you know. Things are in the works thanks to you Patreon subscribers. So once again, patreon.com/MattBinder. Oh yeah, leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, subscribe there. Tell people about the show. Tell me who you want to see on the show. Tell other podcasters and streamers and progressives and leftists that you want to see me, your favorite internet leftist personality, on their shows. Other than that, going into the patron-only half where I'll talk more with Sam Finkelstein. Otherwise, see you all next time on Doomed. Check the reporting.